tomorrow. And that is it for us today. And we will leave you with a... I can't do it. We'll do it live.
Hello. It looks as though we had a moment of last week's show. That took me off guard. That was Bill O'Reilly. Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Jake Anderson, and I'm going to be your host for the next hour, and I'm going to be very honest with you. I just woke up from a nap like 10 minutes ago, and I'm not good at waking up, so I'm going to try and ease my way back into coherence here. Joining me to help me wake up from my nap is my longtime co-host and the prince of alternative knowledge, DB Schwartz. DB, how are you?
Not too bad, Jake. Just watching the just nonstop barrage of lies with this Seth Rich thing, and it's taken on a life of its own. I just sent you a link. They've slash poll, or, you know, 4chan has been able to do what they think is identify the shooters of Rich. And if that's true, and they turn out to be the guys that were in the car dead and had some FBI weapons, well, it all ties neatly together with this enormous psyop going. And I will say that I'm starting to believe Manchester was, again, another cover for blocking this huge thing that could take down the DNC.
Amen, man. I'm really careful about which conspiracy theories, you know, I pledge my support behind and whatnot. But to me, the bizarro logic of believing in the Russia collusion story, but at the same time calling the Seth Rich conspiracy garbage, is a practice and total illogic. And I got a full taste of it this week. I'll just call him a neoliberal friend of mine, posted about how the Fox story had been retracted. And I countered, well, you still have Kim.com claiming that he wants to testify on that. And he made a very sarcastic remark about how that's what kind of source is that. And I was like, well, at least we have a source. You know, the Russian story is just all anonymous intelligence sources. And then all these mental gymnastics of talking about plausible inference and all these big words to try and justify the fact that people that believe it, that Trump colluded with Russia. And again, I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm just saying it's a conspiracy theory. There's no evidence to support it yet. So you have the same people that are dissing everything else that are in our world that's going on, that we know is happening, as conspiracy theories, including the Seth Rich thing. They want a convenient conspiracy theory. They want conspiracy theories when it helps them, but they want to diss conspiracy theories when it goes against their narrative. And it's extremely aggravating. So I know exactly what you're going through, man. And
well, Russia's just, I mean, can we just finally admit that these are all boogeymen? The world is a very dangerous place. We don't need to make it more so with these cloak and dagger games they have going on. They've been spying. Every advanced country in the world, and every country, period, has an intelligence service of some sort. Now, the ones with more resources can obviously dig in and actually influence elections. We do it all the time over there, and they finally succeeded possibly over here. But you know what? If there was nothing to release, Jake, if there was none of those emails that have basically led to Pandora's box, then there would be nothing to release. So their hands are not clean. They just got caught. That's what makes it so pathetic to me when people defend the DNC. Is the GOP as bad? Yeah. Are they as bad? Definitely. If this Seth Rich thing leads to what I think it will, which is the widespread acceptance that there are people in government involved in not only murder for hire, but trafficking and everything else, then it's going to take both parties down. That's what we need. The American people should be happy these things are coming out. They should be preparing for a new
political revolution, because these parties cannot exist, man. They are just beyond corrupt.
But people don't want to be taken out of their comfort zone. That's why when you try and do anything online, when you try and say anything, I have actually an audio representation of what it's like when I go on the internet. This is what it's like. I hope you could hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's we're in an echo, a literal echo chamber. Now are a few people waking up here and there, and can it eventually reach critical mass? Sure. I think we've always, me, you, Nick, I mean, basically anybody in the anti-media family understands that we're in a race against a tyranny that would be globally reaching and pretty much impossible to root out once it embeds itself. I mean, I think that a lot of what was written in Dune with the Butlerian jihad, if people understand my reference, is that technology is going to get to the point in AI and robotics where humans will indeed see a revolt from their own creations. And that's something we need to worry about, because the people in charge of these techs are literally the worst people that have ever existed. They have money they inherited. They have power they inherited. They've never lived a human existence. And they view you, me, and everybody that's beneath them as, well, let's just call them insects. I mean, they would squash us if they could. They know that they're getting ready to have to do that because their corruption's being exposed. And so we're at a crossroads. If you're not awake to that point yet, there's really it's too late for you, because when things start, this psychological effect on you, you're going to panic. You're going to be like a deer in headlights, and you're going to go. So, you know, if you're not already ready psychologically, if you're not getting prepared physically, financially, starting to stockpile stuff, it's going to be too late. And there's already cracks in the armor.
Oh, dude, and, there's so many cracks. This society is falling apart from so many different directions right now. And
it's okay. That's okay. We were founded on shit. So when people think that this was the greatest country that ever existed, that's not true. We firebombed our way into a prosperity of 30 years from 1945 to 75. Now we're at our end. That's how long empires go, about 250 to 300 years. We're not all going to die. There's not going to be a World War III if we stop it. The government doesn't need to exist for me and you to have a good life. We can get along fine without them, but we have to get ready for the next step. Big corporations can't exist and the human race exist at the same time. So everything we talk about all the time, decentralization is a must. If we don't do it, then we will have a war, because there's too many people vying for the same fake scarcity.
Yeah, and we're about to have a guest, Jim Carrey, on, who's going to talk about kind of some foreign policy issues. And it's a scary situation.
Great website he has too. It's like it's a zero hedge that focuses strictly on just like overseas.
Which one?
His geopolitics. I mean, I've read through it, and his analysis is pretty good. And, you know, we need more of that.
Geopolitics alert.
Yeah. I mean, we need that stuff, because what you're getting spoon-fed every day is not the correct truth, the bubblegum truth. The truth is more along the lines of the book Freakonomics. People are doing things, whatever it takes, anytime, any place, to make a buck. They don't care. There's a lot of people out there that view anybody that they can take advantage of as deserving of so that's the way the world's kind of going around right now. You have literal thieves, liars, and crooks using madmen and psychopaths to do their dirty work for them, and naturally, because we're not any of those things, but like I mentioned above, it kind of leaves you in a bad spot. Like, do you have to become a monster to defeat these monsters?
Yeah, that's the eternal question, I guess. You know, we're part of a long cycle of people and experiments with society. And now, you know, we just have this, you know, preponderance of advanced technology. The human psyche, I would argue, has probably not advanced very much in terms of, we still don't really know how to rein in our base instincts in order to make way for logical decisions that benefit the greater good. You know, no matter how much technology we add to it, we still seem to be using it for very horrible things. Now, there are a lot of great things we're using with technology. Absolutely. And I'm not a Luddite. I'm not suggesting that we relinquish technology or anything like that.
And sadly, we're going to have to we're going to have to use it to fight back. So anybody that's thinking we're going to have some kind of ascension to this fifth dimension, we're going to get Superman powers, I don't really think that's going to happen. But we're going to have to use...
Like David Wilcox?
You know, any of those things is possible on a even from a scientific standpoint. If the sun went into some kind of mass corona and it released ridiculous radiation that penetrated some of the people that survived, maybe their children, maybe if women were pregnant and they got that dose, the child would mutate in utero and maybe a few beneficial versions would pop out. But is there something in our architecture that feasibly can allow us to manipulate things within the geomagnetic sphere of this reality? Yeah, we have a Tesla coil in between our two hemispheres. That's what your third eye is, but it's dormant. And like nobody really knows how to wake that up. I mean, it's kind of like, what's the appendix? Did we used to use it, or is it waiting to wake up? So this is a part of the brain that, you know, there's no amount of synaptic connections that wakes it up. It's just sitting there. So I don't know if we're waiting for some kind of mass ejection that'll create the next step, like Wilcox says. Wilcox got an IQ of like 200, so you got to give him some credit. But
he spoke at the UFO festival I went to this week, and I saw him.
He's a genius. So, you know,
he's compelling. I mean, I have a hard time believing there's like 10 alien races battling in the solar system, but all his geopolitics stuff is dead on. And he made a great point, which was that, he doesn't support Trump, but we can use Trump. And the analogy he used was that Trump is like the battering ram. You know, Trump is a battering ram into the establishment. Yep. And once,
even if he goes down, he is.
If he goes down, happens when the battering ram smashes the castle door open? Everyone goes streaming in, and that's exactly what's going to happen. If he F's up, if he fucks up, I put that in quotes because it might be on purpose, and releases. Imagine if they try and take Trump down. Let's just imagine, and they're obviously trying to do that. Imagine if they actually, get to the point where they're impeaching him or whatnot. That dude is, one thing I'll say about Trump, that dude is not going to go down without a fight, and he is going to release some crazy shit. He already showed his propensity for doing that when he talked about Obama wiretapping him. I was stunned by that. I was stunned by that, and I know that a lot of Trump supporters have lost heart. They should have never had it to begin with, because of course the second he gets in there, he's going to be part of the military-industrial complex. That's what happened to Obama and Bush and pretty much every president before that. But there are opportunities, and you said this early on, which is that there are opportunities, and I'm starting to see it now, because the disinformation machine gun rattle that is just constant, and it's just constant on the mainstream news channels, there's no other way to put it. The propagandistic brainwashing use of a narrative to take people's attention off other things and focus the narrative on other things is just unbelievable. This Russian narrative is unbelievable what they're using it for. And let's remember where it came from. The birth of the strong Russian narrative, and I mean the gung-ho Russian narrative, was right when WikiLeaks released all of those cables on the Hillary Clinton campaign. That's when they did a brilliant move. Richard Dolan, is his new book. I've been talking to him a little bit, and he may come on the show actually when he releases his book on false flags. I know you think he's a bit of controlled opposition. I told him that, and he laughed really loudly and seemed to sputter in trying to, you know, come up with a response to that, which is exactly what they would do.
Well, I mean, even if he's half.
Even True. If he's happy, he's good. But
even if, you know, here's the thing. Everybody's, if you're allowed a pulpit, then they've already probably made an arrangement with you. It's our reality, dude. You're not going to get up there in front of a conference and tell the world a bunch of shit they don't want people to know. They just take you out, man.
Now,
William Cooper died. I mean,
according to Will, Wilcox actually has an interesting theory about that. Now, I don't want to get too far into that stuff because I really, working for the anti-media, I really am trying to carefully select which conspiracy theories I put out there. That's why I did a list recently. Did you see my second list of conspiracy theories?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I really try and whittle it down to stuff we know, because over the years, I think as much as the internet can be a suppressive force, especially if they neutralize net neutrality, which I know for certain libertarian or ANCAP tendencies, they don't like the idea of any government regulations. But I'm sorry, if we're going to have a regulation on anything, it should be the internet, because corporations should not be able to choose fast lanes and slow lanes. They should not be able to pay for the dissemination of information. I find that very dangerous. But as time goes on, truth is going to come out about some of these things. Now, some things we'll never learn the truth of. Look, it's like 50 years later, if not more, it's more than 50 years later, and we still don't know what happened to JFK, And there's strong theories. By God, there are strong theories, but there's no consensus on that. And anyone who says there is lying to themselves. There's absolutely no consensus on that. I feel like there will probably never be consensus on 9/11 because I feel like they destroyed most of the evidence, i.e. the steel.
They even shipped the building to Europe.
The steel that they sold to China and melted. They melted the steel.
Actually, I don't know if you read where it went into building. Some of it went supposedly went into building this new NATO HQ, almost like a ritual. So, I don't know, man. The thing is, there's like three control grids, and one of them is more dominant than the other two, and it's obvious what those spheres are, which is us, Russia, China, and our associated satellites, because there's plenty of those. A lot of people don't know that all of us have vassal states. I mean, China's carving up Africa as we speak, and there's nothing we can do about it. They're just going to do it their way, which is economically. Our way has been militarily, the same with Russia, so... It dates back to our experiences 70 years ago, which is going to always be what it is, which was World War II. Because if any major conflict ever goes worldwide again, we're really not going to make it through. So we have to understand the dynamics of the world. They're because of how people won or lost or came to stalemates at the end of the war. Because the way they teach us is total bullshit. You can go to Europe and hear a totally different story. If you have friends that are Japanese, they will tell you they won. So it's different everywhere you go. Now, what is the reality of the world right now, and who has the highest standard of living in the entire world? That's who won. So just keep that in mind. Our empire is crumbling because we didn't really win. Did we really win? No, we didn't. We don't own any vassal states. What we have is military bases everywhere, and we're totally overextended. And that's how Rome fell.
Well, I want to get into a kind of larger foreign policy discussion here because it's tricky and it's getting trickier with each passing day. And we have a really cool guest with us here. He runs a really cool site that DB was talking about before, Geopolitics Alert. He's also written for the Pontiac Tribune and multiple other sites. He's an activist. He's very cool. Jim Carrey. Jim, how are you doing tonight, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Well, I woke up from a nap like 20 minutes ago, so I feel like a coddled little child right now. But you are a very prolific writer, and your posts on Facebook are just amazing because you really like to get in and you break people's logic down. And I've seen you post on all sorts of foreign policy issues. And so the first thing I want to ask you is, what do you think? Me and DB were just talking about how the Russia collusion story is being used as a cover, how it's covering up so many different things right now. What to you is the most interesting foreign policy issue that's going on right now that you think is getting possibly getting covered up by some of this other stuff?
There's a lot going on right now. I mean, I think there's just it's the extent of concerted attacks. Syria is a big one for me, obviously. I don't know what the long game is for Syria at this point, but Trump has clearly been fine enacting Hillary Clinton's foreign policy. I think Ukraine is still a powder keg that nobody talks about. And then North Korea, because I'm not sure what the plan is there either, but Trump has backed himself into a corner and somehow managed to cover that up.
Right. The entire world seems to be a powder keg right now, and I've personally been driven to near madness with this Russia thing, because I simply don't understand why it's like they're smacking a tiger across the face with a stake, messing with Russia right now. I seriously just don't understand it. And is this just a new Cold War, or is it a straight psyop, or clearly is it just a way to take Trump down? Like, what is your interpretation of the Russian Trump collusion conspiracy?
I don't think there's anything to it. I don't see even Michael Flynn, for all the thing, you know, all the flack he's got, I don't think he's done anything out of the ordinary. I don't see it as, I guess it's a Cold War, but I think it's more an attempt by the U.S. to make sure that the world doesn't return to a spheres of influence kind of state. You know what I mean? Like the right. Neo-colonialism. I don't think there's anything to it. I think it's more just an attempt to take him down. That's why you see Republicans like McCain and the embodiment of the establishment, Lindsey Graham and things, people like that, get on it. And I say that I don't think there's anything to it, because I haven't seen any indications that Trump is friendly to Russia, either that or he was going to be, and they managed to stop it.
And there's no – and also that whole evidence thing. Yeah, I mean, there's like normally people have to submit evidence to prove something. It's interesting because it was and multiple people have pointed out this, but it was almost brilliant in terms of, you know, when the WikiLeaks hack came out and showed all that DNC stuff, they did like a 180 and actually gained from it, because not only did they cover up the DNC leak, they said Russia's trying to interfere with our election, and they completely changed the whole narrative. It was really expertly done. And yet at the same time, and they're still doing it, and you know, they're using it to cover up another conspiracy, which is, of course, the Seth Rich conspiracy, which I was convinced was true back when Julian Assange did an interview, and basically it sort of seemed like an accident, but I think he purposely did it. I think he purposely burped up the word Seth Rich in the context of whistleblowers and leakers being scared for their lives. I think he did it on purpose to let people know that Seth Rich was one of the leakers. And of course, anyone reporting on that idiot investigator who came out and told everyone, he should have just kept his mouth shut and kept investigating. Instead, he had to have all his stuff retracted, because of course the deep state is probably threatening his life right now. What is your take on that whole scenario? And do you think there's truth to it? And do you think we can get to the bottom of it?
I'm not entirely sure, and I honestly don't. But I think what the Democrats did was brilliant, because they've managed to, in less than a year from when it was clear they rigged the DNC against a more popular candidate, they've managed to almost hijack this whole resistance thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my biggest problem with it. I'm not sure what happened. I don't think anyone will ever be sure what happened, where these leaks came from. But the fact of the matter is, they managed to latch on. Once again, they managed to control the quote-unquote left end of the spectrum and latched on to all this. You know, now we have protests to reinstate James Comey and let's see Trump's tax returns, which I don't care.
Yeah,
you know, I know Trump
far,
is.
That's how far the left has come. We're protesting in favor of the FBI.
Right, and I'm aware Trump has taken loans from Russian banks, but that's just because he was such a failure. No American bank would touch him. I don't think there's anything nefarious to it.
And let's be clear here. As far as I know, you're not a Trump supporter.
No, not at all.
And I'm certainly not, and DB is certainly not. And I think the metaphor I heard, Jim, I went to a UFO conference of all things over the weekend. And the interesting thing is that these UFO conferences, a lot of it ends up turning into geopolitics, because you can't talk about the disclosure without needing a power structure that's suppressing the disclosure. Now, I don't want to turn this into a discussion about extraterrestrials at all, but what the expression I heard was that Trump is a battering ram, and if we can use his big ugly head to bash in the castle door, and all of the serfs can rush around the side and start stabbing the people inside the castle, that would be great, you know? Don't you think that'd be great?
Yeah, it would, but I don't think it's true. He is clearly just a hyper version, especially when you look at his cabinet, he's a hyper version of the neoconservative agenda.
Right, but if they fuck with him, if they try and impeach him, which is clearly they're trying to do that, this guy he's got a couple screws loose missing. He's got a huge ego. I don't think he's going down without revealing some crazy shit. I mean, I think he's got like a thermonuclear device like Julian Assange, you know?
Yeah, but the issue is who reacts when if he's impeached. My problem is that the people who stand to gain from that are the far right and like super reactionaries. If he were to be impeached, I think you'd see somebody worse than him, you know, following Mike Pence. You could see an independent party that's horrible.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think Trump basically keeps the government destabilized, which is a good thing. And I do not want to see Trump impeached. And, you know, I'm a leftist to an extent. I'm kind of an anarcho-syndicalist, whatever you want to describe that as. And DB, I want to give you a chance because you're more actually versed in foreign. You're more versed in world stuff than me, DB. Do you have a question for Jim?
My main thing is that, you know, we've seen this massive troop buildup, and it's kind of gone under the radar on the Chinese-North Korean border. That's kind of gone quiet now, but I'm guessing they're still massing or maybe even increasing that presence. The last time that happened was when we went in and tried to change things, and that was a little ditty called the Korean War, and that nearly broke our country's back. A lot of people don't know that. So I want to just ask, do you see something like that being coordinated with their big boogeyman of an EMP and at the same time simultaneously just crashing the banking system and bringing us into what they want?
You know,
big question.
I don't know. The problem with Trump is he's so unpredictable. Like that aircraft carrier that, you know, the liberal media laughed and said, oh, he lost an aircraft carrier. I think that was more, potentially it was intentional. And it was intentional to the point where we were on the brink of a possible nuclear incident, you know?
Wait, are you talking about the MH370 flight, the Malaysian flight that disappeared?
No, Jake. Maybe this hasn't gotten out, but our fleet was off of Indonesia instead of South Korea.
Yeah, the USS Carl Vinson or whatever was actually running drills with Australia when Trump said it was off the coast of South Korea.
My bad. All right.
And the liberal media kind of laughed and said, oh, haha, he lost an aircraft carrier, but I think this is really, it could be a part of an extended strategy because, I mean, you had the National Security Council and Sean Spicer were covering up for it and saying, yeah, the aircraft carrier is by South Korea. So I don't know if he made a gaffe and somebody had to cover for it, but it was clear. The Navy released a picture showing that ship was nowhere near South Korea. And the Chinese troops on the border, I think this is, China doesn't want North Korea to fall. There's a whole issue with refugees that would flood over their border that they can't handle. And all of a sudden you have people brought up in the North Korean system blending with an ethnic group that's much like them across the Chinese border, which China can't handle politically or economically, which is why I believe their troops are there. I don't know if that's like preparations for a war or if it's just blustering, but North Korea is kind of, you know, the Gordian knot. I don't think it can be resolved militarily, and I don't know how it can be resolved at all. Especially
That's my
since,
worry.
Yeah, considering you'd be putting Japan and South Korea at risk and potentially millions of lives, it's why it can't be resolved militarily.
I don't even know how you'd resolve it economically either, because what a lot of people don't get is South Korea is like on the verge of becoming the number one economy in the world. So if they could ever unify with North Korea, they'd become like the new Japan.
Yeah, and Trump also has to deal with, you know, I think the blustering came at a time that they knew elections were coming in South Korea and they knew who was going to win, essentially. And he has a policy of the new president has a policy of rapprochement with North Korea. So I think that it was an attempt to do things quickly. And you saw today the mild push into the South China Sea. You see Trump basically leaving China alone, hoping they'll solve North Korea for him. Because, like I said, he's backed himself into a corner on that question.
Yeah, how do you mean?
You
can't attack them, really. That's the problem. You just can't do it.
There's no good option. I mean, you don't know where they're nuclear facilities are. You don't know where their missiles are. A lot of it's mobile, hidden in the hills of North Korea. There's artillery pointed at Seoul that whether or not a lot of it'll work, it'll still do a lot of damage in the time it's able to operate before they find it. You would lose a huge portion of Seoul, and that's an American ally that basically locks up that region for the U.S. with Japan, you know? So I don't know what options there are, and I don't think economic options will work either.
The conspiratorial side of me has trouble believing that with the advanced technology that we assuredly have, that we couldn't do something about it. I think they want North Korea as a boogeyman. I just have trouble believing that our current state of technology, that there's we can't send in like an EMP insect drone or something like that. Like, there's got to be some way that, you know, they can. I mean, we've spent all of this money, trillions of dollars, all of this infrastructure on third world countries that barely have a rocket, period. But we can't take a legitimate action against a country that actually may have a nuclear weapon. Now, I'm not suggesting we should. That'd be a preemptive strike. I don't think North Korea deserves to be struck. I do not believe in regime change at all. But it's hard for me to believe that our government could not figure out a way to do something about this. But hey, look, I mean, I'm with all of the writers who say that we should leave North Korea alone. I think you know, that's a bad regime, but it's, you know, we got to stop this regime change crap. I mean, I don't know, Jim, are you on that side of it? Do you think that we should be trying to destabilize and destroy North Korea?
No, absolutely not. I think left alone that there would be much more of an opportunity for dialogue. You know, the nuclear weapons are, they learn their lesson from, say, Libya or Iraq or
right.
things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. But exactly. I was about to cite both of those countries. When you leave these huge power vacuums in both Iraq and Libya, you just create these breeding grounds for terrorism, you know?
Right. And I think the issue is that you could try like an EMP or a cyber attack or something like that, but North Korea has a lot of options to go out big in in a death throw. You know what I mean? Conventional
yeah.
weapons and just.
And he probably would. I mean, I think, it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, the North Korean, you know, we don't hear much from them. They don't let much media in. And I'm genuinely curious as to what it's like in North Korea. I have a deep, deep curiosity about that. I'm not saying I want to live there.
It's just worse than the Holocaust, dude, for anybody that's in those camps. And then anywhere besides Pyongyang, they really don't have electricity.
You know, we still have that. Do you remember that dude? Do you guys know the story of the dude that like stole a flag, an American citizen that stole a flag and is like literally serving like 20 years hard labor there right now?
Yeah, he got 10 years.
That dude's screwed. He's still there. Oh my God, that would be a documentary right there if we can get a hold of that guy.
But you see, I wouldn't be so quick to believe that because of a lot of that comes from Japanese media and South Korean media, who's been proven multiple times where American outlets had to retract their stories. They've been proven to lie.
All right, you're talking psyops now. I like it, Jim.
You have a lot of Western stories, you have them quoting, you know, a South Korean media outlet, and then later they'll retract it because it's just a false story. Like the whole Kim executed family members with an anti-aircraft gun or fed them to dogs, those turned out to be fake.
Yeah, and there's a lot of propaganda that goes on. Yeah, I remember when that story came out, I was obsessed with it, and I read every news story I could find on it, and every single one said the exact same details, very little information, and I couldn't help but wonder, is this real? You know, is this, it, you know, you can kind of start smelling when something feels fake.
I'd be careful believing any of it. And you want a perfect example? A couple days after the alleged sarin gas attack by Assad in Syria, you had I think it was the Japanese defense minister suddenly said, oh, well, North Korea has a bunch of sarin gas ready to go. And they pushed that out to Western media all of a sudden.
Right.
Because they thought, like, oh, sarin will be the trigger to get Americans to care about this.
There's a new fear tactic every day. There's a new, it's just constant, new terror attacks. I frankly don't, and I don't want to get into a big thing about this because I want to push on to a different subject, but I personally never understood why you have these countless terrorist groups that of course we are the major enemy and for good reason, but they attack other countries. And since 9/11, we have not had a major terrorist attack, but it doesn't take a major terrorist attack. Any terrorist could walk on to a bus at any time in America and blow it up. I simply don't understand why it hasn't happened more. I have a theory as to why it hasn't happened more. But the whole terrorism scare is just very peculiar to me because you see these, dots around the planet, around the largely Western countries and Euro countries. And of course, actually the whole world, there's terrorist attacks. Like a one man bombing campaign and whatnot, it's clearly not terribly difficult to do to give someone a bomb and to tell them to go blow themselves up. Why do you think we haven't seen more in the U.S.?
I don't think it's as prevalent as they say it is. For one thing, the majority of people the FBI rounds up on, links to terrorism are people they led to terrorist groups anyway, or bought plane tickets to Syria or whatever. And I think they also, they know that groups like ISIS know that they don't have to carry out major attacks. Look at incrementally, they can do these things like the Orlando shooting or a Boston bombing. And we play, the American psyche plays right into what they want to do.
But those weren't ISIS attacks. The Orlando shooter, he was not, he was not officially conscripted by ISIS.
No.
They'll
take credit for anything.
The Boston bombers, of course they will, but the Boston bombers too, they were just two brothers that had been kind of influenced by propaganda or whatnot, supposedly. But I'm talking about officially, terrorist attacks were officially claimed by ISIS, where it wouldn't take a big operation. It would just take one person getting on a bus and blowing it up, and you have terror all across the country, possibly martial law. I mean, we could have that at any time, but I don't understand why we haven't seen. I'm not asking for more of it. I don't want it to happen, but I don't understand why, it seems like they have control of the situation, which would lead one to ask why we're diverting so many resources into stopping it.
I think ISIS is more concerned with their standing in the Middle East right now, especially as they're on their last legs. I think you'll see it you may see more as they turn into an insurgency. You know, they're losing so much ground that I think they will become more of a traditional terrorist group like an Al-Qaeda or something like that. But as far as, you know, they don't even have to perpetuate attacks, just the refugee crisis and the racist rhetoric and things like that. They've gotten, the election of Trump shows they've gotten the reaction they wanted.
Right.
The Patriot Act after September 11 showed exactly, you know, they got what they wanted. They got us to react.
Yeah.
Jim, they got us to react out of fear.
Jim, what do you think of the theory that, and this is just my theory, and I believe there's plenty to back it up, that we've always had two groups fighting, and that the intelligence services have been winning the last 40 years, actually since they were able to take JFK out, and now the military has their man in, and they got him in by whatever means necessary. And if the intelligence services want to reverse that, it's going to be an internal war that spills out. What do you think about that? Because that's what I think I see that's happened.
I mean, they can, but at the same time, you know, they work in tandem too. They have the same objectives at the end of the day. I don't know how true this deep state narrative is against Trump, because he's, whatever's happened, he's clearly bought into, look at his cabinet. He's clearly bought into the neocon agenda 100% and accelerated it, really. I don't know. I guess this is what I expected from him. I don't know how anyone expected any different.
Yeah, this is exactly what I expected from him.
Yeah, I see the...
I think he's going to go even further than people realize when he starts personally getting in bed with foreign leaders, and there's really not a lot we're going to be able to do about it.
Yeah, look at, you know, the Saudi Arabia deal, which is something even Obama had to pause that deal for a minute just due to bad PR. I'm sure Hillary would have authorized it when she came in. But it's just the fact that he's fully willing to do it. He goes to Saudi Arabia and he blames terrorism on Iran, which is ridiculous. That's why I don't understand the whole obsession with the deep state thing, because I see him carrying out the State Department and the Pentagon and the CIA agenda worldwide.
The optics of him are bad. He's bad at selling stuff. And domestically, they're full scale trying to bring him down. I watched, in the hotel, I watched MSNBC and CNN, and it's literally 24/7 impeach Trump, you know, like, but who knows? Maybe, you know, that's just part of the narrative. I don't know. Maybe that part's overblown too, you know?
I think there's some hostility because he's done damage by taking the mask off of the United States policy.
Yeah.
That's where I think a lot of the hostility comes from. His foreign policy is Hillary Clinton's foreign policy, you know?
Yeah, famously, the same day he attacked Syria, she came out and said he should attack Syria. You know that.
Yeah, that was her plan.
That must have been great for his supporters. Well, we can tie this back into foreign policy, but I know that your thought goes a lot further, and I see you a lot engaged in. I'm part of all these anarcho groups like ANCOM versus ANCAP and that kind of stuff. And I've seen you participate in some of those discussions. And so I want to move the conversation more in towards of like a solution / moving forward / what would be the way that we would counteract this. And where do you fall on that spectrum? And what do you think, I mean, clearly, we're not going to dismantle every government in the world, in my mind, that's what it would take to create a stateless society. If you even have one government, you're going to have who knows? I don't know, maybe. But you know, where do you fall in that in terms of you know, we see what states are doing, we see how their synergistic relationship with corporations and whatnot. Where do you fall in the anarchist discussion? Or what is your belief and where we should be headed and how humanity could best flourish.
I mean, it'll be unpopular, but my personal philosophy is I'm a Marxist-Leninist, but...
All right.
I believe in, you know, especially now in some left unity. I think there's the ANCAP type philosophy needs to go, because the whole classical liberalism thing that facilitated the system we're in right now. I don't think the election should be participated in, because the DNC showed they're corrupt. Trump shows it doesn't matter who you elect, because the policy carries on.
Right.
There should be genuine, you know, revolutionary movement building. And you can start that with, of course, I accept small steps towards that, like syndicalist, you know, worker owned factories and things like that. But that's not enough. A rejection of the elections has to be a primary thing, because clearly they're a show. You got Hillary Clinton in office right now. I think you just, class consciousness is a big thing. People, you have two sides of the spectrum. One hates the government and one hates corporations in what's accepted political dialogue. The line has to be drawn connecting those two things. Obviously, they're the same, you know, they're two heads of the same monster. So,
well, that's essentially what the deep state theory is.
Right. If you look at, you know, I don't think a lot of people propose solutions like off the grid living and things like that. But you can see how corporations write, those same people know corporations write the regulations, or they'll never allow something like that to grow and exist. So it has to be. And it's going to be slow and it's going to be hard, but a mass movement needs to come. It can't be a few people leading by example or anything like that. I think the anti-media, like, their reach is something that is incredibly, you know, it has potential. A couple million people here and there is good, but it's only a start. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The distrust of the mainstream media now, well, on Trump's side now, that can be fostered, I think, if those people start seeing the right sources instead of right-wing sources. Democrats, unfortunately, have fallen to thinking the New York Times and CNN are the resistance, too.
My God, yeah.
Yeah.
Washington Post, oh, my God. It drives me nuts. Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, in many ways, Trump and the alt-right co-opted the anti-mainstream media movement in a bad way.
Yeah, I think an important thing of his presidency will be exposing him as a fraud. He is not. Stephen Bannon has no control at this point, no matter what the alt-right thought he would do.
Right.
He has to be continuing exposing, especially foreign policy. Like I said, he's Hillary Clinton. He proposed safe zones in Syria a few days after he was inaugurated. It has to be shown that clearly this is going to carry on no matter who's elected. I don't care how much of an outsider they say they are. Even Bernie Sanders was, you know, a friend to Israel and approved drone bombings and all of that. So the hypocrisy has to continue to be pointed out.
True.
I don't want to get in bed with the right wing, but if you instill some consciousness in them that these things don't matter, these elections don't matter, I think that's an important thing to keep spreading right now.
Well, you know, one thing that I've been harping on for a while, and of course I didn't come up with it, Ralph Nader and Ron Paul have been spearheading this movement of a left-right coalition. And I think we have a unique moment. I'm kind of slowly working on an article about it. A unique moment in history to unite the radical left and the alt-right on a few specific issues, because I do think we have to be coordinated and focused on a few different things. And one issue that the radical left and the alt-right agree on is military intervention and regime change and not allowing that to happen. There's a couple others, the drug war, surveillance, ubiquitous surveillance. There's actually almost a dozen overlapping issues where these two groups would agree on. And I receive a lot of resistance from this idea from centrist Democrats who would never, ever deign to speak to a libertarian or an alt-right person. And on the other side, the alt-right people just, you know, they see the anti-fa movement and they just assume all leftists are commies and bad commies and they're the real fascists and whatnot.
Yeah.
And but I see an opportunity here to unite people on a few issues. I mean, do you think that's possible?
I think foreign intervention is definitely the one to move on. I wouldn't say the alt-right, but I'd say like the libertarian right.
Right.
Which I consider Ron Paul types. You know what I mean? But I do think as you unite in like opposition to intervention and things like that, it has to be explained that this isn't just a budgetary reason to stop getting involved. This is a crisis of imperialism.
Right.
You know, the U.S., it's not just they could do what they do with a reduced military budget and you have Trump boosting it. You know what I mean? I think that's an aspect that could easily be united on, but then it has to be explained why it needs to be stopped altogether. The imperialism has to be explained to the libertarian right types that it's not. Capital will continue seeking more capital abroad. That's how this system evolved. You know, the U.S. took the place of the fallen empires after World War One and Two, and it has to be shown that this isn't just about balancing the budget or anything like that. Capital will continue, even if you restarted today, capital would grow and pursue this policy again. But I do think there are issues you can unite with, and the issue I have is just, what do we do after, you know, and how do you explain it afterwards? The opposition to these problems has to be analyzed in a certain way, and it has to be understood that this can happen again, even if we restarted tomorrow.
Right. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, you know?
Right. That's my opposition to, like, anarcho-capitalism. I think that the whole classical liberal free market thing, that it clearly evolved into this. You know, this country started from classical liberalism and it evolved into this. We didn't just get here overnight and it's not just crony capitalism or whatever. This will come back. That's my fear, is if we let the wrong forces take control of this, or another, you know, a libertarian type demagogue or something like that, I think you see this happen again.
But Jim, we've never seen a real free market.
Yeah, right. You had everything, you know, the whole world order as it is started on classical liberalism, as far as the West goes. So I don't see what, even China has embraced neoliberalism for their own gain. You know, I don't see how you keep this from evolving into it again. Especially when the basis for everything is just the accumulation of wealth.
Right. And exponential growth in a finite system, you know.
Right.
And of course, we talk about this all the time, but the coming age of automation and artificial intelligence and all of these incredible technologies, they're really quite literally at our doorstep, like within the next decade, are going to be. I don't even think there's any logical way for us to prepare for them. But we talk about this all the time. And, you know, it's going to be a strange decade. DB, you got anything on your mind?
Oh, no, man. I mean, it is really just to harp on the whole thing of the division of power. I mean, it's not like having a military intelligence service or the naval intelligence or whoever's pulling Trump strings is going to be a lot different than the banker elite side. But I mean, I think what we're going to see is they're going to try to expand the empire while they have some kind of technical advantage over the other so-called superpowers. And that's just a scary thought, man. I think that their whole seven countries thing is going to be expanded, and the Century for a New America program's probably been going full steam since he got in.
Yeah, remember Lebanon was on that list, and I recently, some earlier this week, I saw some positioning of a spillover of terrorists into Lebanon. So it wouldn't surprise me if that got on the list of countries we destroy soon enough. But yeah, so I guess I'll get a prediction from you. Do you think we're going to see, you know, some kind of military involvement in North Korea, Jim?
No, that's the short answer. I don't think it's viable. That's why I think there's so much pressure on China to do something, but there's not much they can do either. They aren't as close to, I think that was something Trump learned when Xi Jinping came here, is they're not as close to North Korea as he thought they were. I think you have a standoff. This is his projection of power, and he's doing that everywhere. Syria was the same thing. He wants to show that he's not the Obama, the weak Obama, who supposedly capitulated and did nothing, even though I think he did plenty. But I think this is just, that's why you've seen the rhetoric on North Korea die down. He doesn't know what to do. And he talked himself into a corner real fast. Like you said, he's blustering. He makes mistakes. He clearly doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's totally improving the whole damn thing. And
they're probably going to bring Kissinger out of his coffin soon if things don't turn around here.
What are you talking about? He was sitting there posing with Trump, taking a photo op. His jowls.
Well, what I mean is, you know,
his jowls were flapping.
They're going to bring him out of retirement if he doesn't get his ship straight.
Yeah,
somebody like him. Yeah.
Well, there's plenty of people. You know, you got Dick Cheney, you got Wolfowitz. Yeah, their agenda has gone frightfully well since 2000, since 1999. I mean, they
and ironically, the manufacturing jobs are they're coming back, man, because the defense industry is in full swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can't last forever, though. That's the. And what do you do when you're going to continue to create more situations? What are you going to do?
Bomb the world and rule it from the skies.
Yeah, right.
We're up against the clock here, but Jim, real quick, tell our viewers where they can read more of your stuff.
You can find us at geopoliticsalert.com, you know, Geopolitics Alert on Facebook, and I believe it's at GP World News on Twitter.
All right, well, man. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was good talking to you.
All right,
peace, everyone. All right, take it easy. Call it a reality, because there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. Yeah.